From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is supported by the fully remodeled and expanded Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe and Soda Fountain. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville and open daily until 9 p.m., including Sundays. 277-8493 or facebook.com/Walmart Museum for more information.
KUAF Night with the Naturals will be Thursday, April 24th at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. KUAF ticket holders will be seated together and one lucky guest will throw out the first pitch if more than 200 KUAF tickets are sold. A portion of ticket sales will benefit KUAF. KUAF tickets are only available at 927-4063 or click the banner at KUAF.com to email an order.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, those amphibious harbingers of spring, frogs and toads, are being counted all over Arkansas. We'll find out how the frog watch works and if the number of frogs in the state is diminishing.
And the AMP is being prepared for its first show. The seats aren't in yet, but work is going on almost around the clock toward a June 1st completion date.
First, some of Arkansas's largest crops are off to a slow start because of cold and rainy weather during the past few months, which delayed planting. Matt King, Director of Market Information and Economics for the Farm Bureau of Arkansas, says conditions on the ground may prompt some farmers to make adjustments to this year's crops.
This late start's a very big headache for producers, may cause some switches in what they would like to plant. A lot of producers would like to grow more rice this year. We saw those numbers up almost 500,000 acres, but there's a smaller window to get that planted. So we may have producers who are unable to get in the field.
But King says a late start to planting doesn't always mean a bad harvest.
Earlier planted crops typically do better, but we've seen last year we were a little later planting than what we had been in the past and saw record yields.
Although it's far from an ideal start for crops like corn and rice, King says good conditions this summer could erase many, if not all, potential losses incurred by the delay, and that extreme heat in the summer is a bigger concern for farmers than rain-saturated fields in March. Meanwhile, the University of Arkansas Extension Service has reported crop predictions for Arkansas this year. According to data from the Natural Agriculture Statistics Service, acres of corn planted are expected to decline by about 32%, while the number of acres planted this year in rice predicted to rise by 41% from last year.
State lawmakers have touted Arkansas's adoption of the Medicaid expansion provision of the Affordable Care Act as an influential model for other states to pursue. New Hampshire legislators recently passed a law similar to Arkansas's private option. While the plans are far from identical, Todd Bookman with New Hampshire Public Radio says Arkansas's plan did play a role.
There was a lot of debate really over the past year, year and a half about whether or not to expand and if so, how to do it. And we created a study commission, a group of lawmakers and others that spent the summer studying a possible Medicaid expansion here in New Hampshire and what that could look like. And we looked at a number of approaches, including the Arkansas model and the private option being rolled out in Arkansas. And then I think what lawmakers really decided to do is take parts of what they liked in the Arkansas model, but also try to craft what they are terming as a New Hampshire solution.
Unlike Arkansas's plan, the New Hampshire Act first enrolls the newly eligible into traditional Medicaid before phasing them into private plans by 2016. Like Arkansas's plan, though, the program will have to be renewed at a later date, in part to allay concerns of a Republican Party split over the policy.
When the new Bentonville West High School opens in Centerton, more traffic is expected to crowd down streets leading to the campus being built on Gamble Road. That's one of the reasons why the school district is looking to partner on a traffic study with the city and with Benton County. Mary Lay, Director of Communications for Bentonville Public Schools, says that school district officials want to conduct the study before the school is finished because increased traffic affects everyone driving in the town.
Additional cars in that area will impact the county roads and it will impact Centerton. It will impact other businesses economically down the road that once more students and more staff are congregating in that area, it will be more economic for them to think of building other buildings that will serve extra people in the community. So it is a situation that has an impact more than just our school district, but the county and the Centerton community as well.
She says the study will cost roughly $24,000, a price tag she says school officials hope to split evenly with the city and county. She says the cost will bring a professionally conducted traffic study by Peters and Associates Engineers of Little Rock, which should give school, city, and county officials ideas of how best to manage larger traffic volumes when the school does open.
especially when you have track meets and band concerts. And it also, you got to remember, students go to school about the same time families are trying to get to their employment in and out of Bentonville and other areas that are nearby Centerton. So we need to see how we can do this as seamlessly as possible, because the worst thing we can do is stress everybody else out before their day ever even begins. And we want things to be safe. These are students that will be driving, and staff, which is also parents of students and families, and we will have parents driving in and out and trying to get to work. Those are tense times during the day, and we want to make sure that we plan accordingly to make this the safest situation we can.
School district officials will present the proposed traffic study to the Benton County Quorum Court's Finance Committee at its meeting tonight.
Early voting begins today for two special elections in Washington County. Prairie Grove voters are being asked whether the city should annex a strip of land south of town across which the Highway 62 bypass will run when completed. In West Fork, residents will vote to fill the vacancy left when former Mayor Francis Heim resigned late last year. Early voting in both elections will take place between 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. for the rest of this week, and again on Monday in the Washington County Clerk's Office in Fayetteville.
Registration opens today for urban archery deer hunt permits in Arkansas. Eight urban areas are taking part in the urban archery season this year, including the Chaffee Crossing area in Fort Smith and Barling. Those seeking an urban archery deer hunting license must apply within the next month and meet certain criteria set by the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. Criteria including passing a bow hunting education class and attending a scheduled urban deer hunt orientation. To apply for an urban hunting permit and to find out more about the regulations, you can go to agfc.com.
Bentonville-based America's Car Mart has opened its 132nd dealership. According to the City Wire, the newest used car dealership is located in Warrensburg, Missouri, making it the company's 18th dealership in the state and the 8th new opening this fiscal year. Car Mart shares closed up 3.4% yesterday at $36.66.
Mostly cloudy tonight. Chance of showers and thunderstorms. Lows will be around 59. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy. 40% chance of showers, possibly thunderstorms. Highs will be in the mid-70s. And tomorrow night, mostly cloudy. Showers and thunderstorms likely. Lows in the lower 60s. The construction at the new, not-yet-finished Arkansas Music Pavilion, or AMP, doesn't stop for much these days. Darkness, maybe the weather, but not much else. The goal is for the construction to be over in 60 days. Yesterday, when the deadline was still 61 days away, Peter Lane, the president and CEO of the AMP's parent facility, the Walton Arts Center, looked out from the stage to where all those seats will soon be.
And I think we're on track. The weather hasn't been a friend this winter, and spring seems to be somewhat challenging as well. But this crew that we've got on board with Crossland and Bird Air, they're committed, and they've been working 7 days a week. So I think we're there.
Lane was at the AMP construction site yesterday to mark a milestone. The topping off of the stage area, a beam signed by the guest at Monday's ceremony, was put in place at the rear of the stage. Topped off, yes, but the next 2 months will be a flurry of activity.
Good morning and welcome. Wow, the first amplified sound on the new AMP stage. Woo-hoo! Welcome, everybody.
Yesterday's gathering of donors, press, and invited guests was not to show off a completed venue, but to whet the appetite for what is in store. The AMP, officially the Walmart AMP, includes one of the largest stages in Arkansas, a 5,430 square foot permanent stage with more than 34,000 square feet of covered space for audience and musicians. That stage has 46 feet of clearance above the floor, and will be able to hold 85,000 pounds. Brian Crown, the general manager for the AMP, says the width, the height, and the strength of the stage means almost any touring act will be able to fit onto the stage and bring along their electronic elements like large video boards.
You know, that was our goal. With the grid as high as it is and that could hold up to 85,000 pounds, you know, there's a lot of large acts that might come down sometimes in money, but they want to unload all their trucks and get all their toys out, you know what I mean? So the goal was to be able to physically accommodate productions that are traveling. And I'm sure there may be something going on out there like you too that maybe we can't fit anything, but I mean, just about anything that might be on the road, I think we can handle.
The plan is to handle a lot more, not just with the size of the artist's equipment, but with the sheer number of people who will pass through the gates to see shows. Peter Lane says simple math helps place the potential reach of the amp in context.
What is startling is we're going to be able to seat 3,000 people all in one area. And put it in perspective, with the 4,000 seats that we can do plus on the lawn, that's the total number of people that will be coming through the Walton Arts Center this week to see The Wizard of Oz. So, I mean, it's to be able to present a concert or an entertainment event where 7,000 plus people can see it, it's truly a game changer for Northwest Arkansas.
The venue comes complete with air-conditioned restrooms, a permanent box office, and permanent concession stands. All steps up from the temporary homes for the previous incarnations in the parking lot of the Northwest Arkansas Mall, and then at the Washington County Fairgrounds. Brian Crown says the earlier seasons for the amp have been fine, but the permanent home should be much, much better.
Before it was like, hey, come to my venue on a parking lot at the mall. I promise you it's going to be cool. And we were so fortunate to have the fairgrounds as an option for 2 years. And it's like, hey, it's festival style in a field. And now it's going to be like, I don't have to apologize for anything.
The Walton Arts Center took ownership of the amp in 2011 with plans to improve and expand. For the past two seasons, the temporary stage has been at the Washington County Fairgrounds. The new site, inside Rogers City Limits in Benton County, is an $11 million project. When opened, patrons will be able to figure out where some of that financial support came from. Not only does the venue carry Walmart at the front of its name, but there is also the Jonelle Hunt Pavilion, the Walker Plaza, Tyson concession stands, the General Mills lawn, and a section of seats near the stage will be known as the Kellogg's Bowl. Cox Communications will sponsor a Cox concert series. Peter Lane told the visitors Monday morning the finish accomplishment will be in lockstep with the mission of Walton Arts Center.
It's about arts, culture, it's about entertainment. And a number of years ago, 2011, we approached Brian Crown, who's here today, and our general manager, and we said, Brian, you figured out this contemporary music scene. What's going on out at the mall? And we went to see what he had built out there and realized it could be part of a larger picture of what all of us are trying to do in Northwest Arkansas.
The biggest, most identifiable feature is the awning that will cover at least 3,000 seats. 3/5 of that tarp is in place. The rest should be attached to the gigantic poles in just a couple of weeks. While Crossline Construction of Rogers is handling the construction of most of the amp, Amherst, New York-based Bird Air is in charge of that big fabric cover. David Swain of Fayetteville, the project manager for the amp construction, says the fabric cover system is designed to withstand winds of up to 90 miles per hour. This giant tent is a first for him. And he says the creation has been an exercise in exact measurement.
It's 68 feet up. We're a quarter of an inch of tolerance from the column in the middle of the stage, which is 64 feet out, and 32 feet in the air is a quarter inch of tolerance.
A quarter inch.
Zero. I mean nothing, because there's one pin. There's only one pin holds these 30 inch pipes. These are 30 inches in diameter. There's one pin holds it to the stage at the very mansard here, at the very top, and one pin holds it at the column. This is not moving, and that column won't move. It's not like you can lean it. So the tolerances are exceptional. They've done a real good job. We hit them. It all went up very, very cleanly.
The earliest show on the announced schedule isn't until June 20th. Darius Rucker and Pat Green. Tickets for that show, as well as a July 7th concert featuring Alison Krauss and Willie Nelson, are already on sale. Steve Martin and the Steep Canyon Rangers, Boston, Foreigner, and the Steve Miller Band will be on sale soon. Brian Crown says other shows have been confirmed, but can't be announced just yet. The Walton Arts Center is betting that with the Northwest Arkansas metro area expected to reach a population of 500,000 people before the end of summer, there is a demand for bigger acts that can bring up to 7,000 fans to a single show. Interest does seem high. Peter Lane says 85% of the VIP accommodations have already been sold. Brian Crown says any new venue has a slight disadvantage booking some acts who want somebody else to go first, but he's confident things are falling into place.
Even though this will be our ninth or tenth season, I can't remember right now, you are a new venue. Sometimes they, no matter who it is or how cool it is, nobody wants to be the first person to open it. But it was kind of cool once we got on sale with Allison and Willie. I started confirming some more shows, you know, so it's good.
And for Brian Cran, a little patience waiting for the next 60 days is no big deal. His Dixon Street business, George's Majestic Lounge, actually hosted the press conference for the announcement that the Amp, then owned by completely different interests, would be at home in a mall parking lot nearly 10 years ago.
I actually booked their first show. It was Doobie Brothers, Father's Day, and my band Oreo Blue opened it. You know, it's crazy. The first time I played George's was in 89. I would have never imagined I would own George's. I would have never imagined that I was going to buy the Amp or have the opportunity to grow it into this with the Walton Arts Center. So it's been a crazy trip, but what a great one for our region.
More concerts for the inaugural season are expected to be announced soon.
In about 14 minutes on Ozarks, the town of Mayflower, 1 year after a massive pipeline malfunction, left an indelible mark.
They've set an April 7th deadline for us to basically submit the work plan that will verify the integrity of the entire pipeline, and that will take into account the findings of our investigation.
Mayflower and the oil spill a year later. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large.
KUAF Spring On Air fundraiser begins this Friday, and we're looking to welcome more new members to KUAF than ever before. Your contribution can help us reach that goal as a challenge pledge. Your challenge pledge will encourage KUAF listeners to become new members of this station, and member contributions make up the largest portion of our operating budget. Make your challenge pledge right now and know that you're helping bring new members to this public radio station. To learn how, go to KUAF.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. We've marked the beginning of spring on this program in the past by listening in on peepers, a species of frog that lends a special lilt to the spring soundtrack. This spring, Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich talks frogs again, this time with the Arkansas Regional Coordinator for Frog Watch USA.
Spring peepers and other froggy companions croon in chorus around a Carroll County pond. They're proclaiming that winter is over.
You're going to have wood frogs, there's southern leopard frogs, and there's dwarf American toads. They're starting to sing.
Tom Crone, who lives in Yellville with his spouse Peggy, is regional coordinator for Frog Watch USA. He's our Arkansas frog ambassador.
Otherwise known as the Frogman. I'm in this work because I was looking for a third career. I actually grew up as an amphibian.
Tom Crone really is an amphibian, having served in the Naval Submarine Service for 22 years. When he retired from teaching, he joined the Arkansas Master Naturalists. A bioinventory project required frog data, and that's when he learned about Frog Watch USA.
Frog Watch is part of the program of citizen science. So people are somewhat familiar with citizen science. Anybody that's done an Audubon Christmas bird count, that's citizen science. It's huge numbers of people that are amateurs but have some knowledge of sights and sounds going out and taking counts of for biological purposes. Those counts become available then to universities and colleges or the general public or anybody that's wanting to find some data about that species. So that's what we do in Frog Watch. We go out, we listen for exactly 3 minutes once a week or so at a pond or a location, a wetland of our choice, and we determine the species that we hear and the intensity of each of the species and enter it into a national database called Frog Watch FieldScope. We do that entering ourselves, and as soon as it's entered, it's available to anybody in the world to use that data.
Tom Crone's been monitoring frogs in Arkansas since 2009 and is instrumental in creating a new state database. So how many frogs do we have in Arkansas?
There's 23 species of frogs and toads in Arkansas, and of those, there's 19 different species that live in the Ozarks.
You'll learn about Arkansas frogs at free workshops, which Tom Crone hosts around the state. Next Tuesday, he'll be in Northwest Arkansas at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale from 6:30 to 9 p.m.
And during our workshops, our participants learn to identify all 19 species. I teach the local frogs for local frogs and toads for people that attend the workshops.
By following Crone's prepared PowerPoint presentation, participants will learn to identify and mimic frog calls and also about wetlands and frog monitoring to become certified listeners. Frog Watch volunteers and commit to spending February through August visiting a site of their choice to identify individual frogs and toads to submit to the national database. So far, 106 chapters of Frog Watch USA have organized around the country. And Tom Crone has established Arkansas Frogs and Toads, his nonprofit organization that funds his work, which is supported in part by the North Central Arkansas Master Naturalist.
Gotten a couple grants, and we've established a couple fundraisers. We're selling raffle tickets on a quilt, and we make toad abodes, toad houses, and sell those sometimes at our workshops.
One question Tom Crone's getting at his workshops this year is how frogs fare during this intensely cold and snowy winter.
Frogs and toads hibernate in the winter, and so if it's really cold, they just come out later, and that's what we're seeing this year. The frog, for example, might be hibernating at the bottom of a pond, and the water at the bottom stays about 39 degrees. As long as the pond doesn't freeze solid, that frog is happy.
Like this chuckling leopard frog, a favorite of Tom Crone's.
For one thing, it's a beautiful frog. It has black geometric figures on its back. It has a little bit of green. It's about 2 to 3 to 4 inches long, depending on how old they are.
But one thing that's occurred this year, and perhaps you've noticed this, is that frogs are emerging much later in the season than usual.
What they call the phenology, the timing. Last year, we started hearing spring peepers, you know, the frogs that sound like only when there's a lot of them, it's much louder. We started hearing those at the end of January, beginning of February. This year, not until March. So, you know, they know it's not time to come up yet. There's still more winter coming.
And when they emerge from hibernation, they have a lot of business to take care of.
They get something to eat, and then they want to breed. And the fact that they breed in mass may be true. One of the things that we listen for when we're out doing our monitoring is not only the species, but also the intensity. And by intensity, I don't mean the loudness, but the numbers. Some frogs, you may go to a large body of water and hear one or two bullfrogs.
Another spring frog is the upland chorus frog.
Also, early frogs are chorus frogs. They sound like your thumb scraping across a comb. And then during the late spring and then the summer is when all the tree frogs will come out.
By early summer, we may hear cricket frogs and this fowler toad. And here's our American toad. None of Arkansas's frogs or toads are listed as threatened or endangered, thankfully. But the bigger picture reveals that we are in big trouble.
In the big picture, the amphibians in the United States, amphibians, about 36% of all amphibians, and that includes frogs, toads, and salamanders, 36% of them are endangered or threatened in some way. Now, it's not so in Arkansas. We're fortunate. Our natural state is taking care of natural areas maybe a little bit better than other parts of the country. But in our country, they're at a high level compared to maybe 10% of all birds or mammals. You know, so amphibians are much more at risk. And it's the first time in history, I think, that we could experience the extinction of a animal classification totally within, you know, maybe 50 years.
So in the coming weeks, as things warm, if you encounter a pasture pond or ephemeral forest pool full of spring singers, take a moment.
Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich spoke with Tom Crone, who will present a workshop on Frog Watch USA's monitoring operation in Arkansas Tuesday, April 8th, that's a week from today, at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale from 6:30 until 9 that night. If you'd like to know more, ArkansasFrogsAndToads.com.
Winter is over, officially. Just to make it even more official, the seasonal recreation areas in the Ozark-St. Francis National Forests, the ones shuttered in the cold weather months, are opening. Lake Weddington's amenities open for weekends beginning April 11th, and the everyday season for the cabins, lodge, and campground begin May 23rd. Cove Lake Day Use Area and Swim Beach at Mount Magazine near Paris will be open by May 1st. Many of the trails around the lake have also been closed because of ice damage, but are expected to be open by May Day as well. And the Moccasin Gap Campground will be closed until later in the summer in order to rehabilitate campsites, but the trails there are open.
It's perhaps the only tradition of its kind on a university or college campus in the country, maybe even in the world, Senior Walk. Every graduate of the University of Arkansas has their name put into permanence on a sidewalk, and the 2012 edition of Senior Walk will be dedicated Saturday afternoon at 2 with a ceremony taking place at the steps of Old Main. The U of A says all members of the Razorback family are invited, but they do ask for attendees to register at arkansasalumni.org/seniorwalk by the end of the day Thursday.
Joe Luck, the former president of Heifer International, will deliver this year's Dale and Betty Bumpers lecture Thursday afternoon at 2 in Giffel's Auditorium in Old Main on the U of A campus. The event is free and open to the public, but take note, seating is on a first-come, first-served basis. Ms. Luck's lecture is titled From Hunger to Hope to Human Dignity. She is a 2010 World Food Prize laureate for her work to ensure availability to people in need around the world. The lecture is sponsored by the Dale Bumpers College of Agricultural, Food, and Life Sciences at the University of Arkansas.
Today marks the beginning of Child Abuse Prevention Month. The Children's Safety Center will be marking the occasion by placing pinwheels at three locations. Each pinwheel represents a child the Children's Safety Center helped in 2013. You'll be able to see the pinwheels placed today at the corner of Highway 71B and Emma in Springdale, at Farmington City Hall this afternoon, and tomorrow afternoon at the Fayetteville Boys and Girls Club.
The fourth annual Faye Jones School of Architecture Summer Design Camp will be open to junior and senior high students in June on the U of A campus and at Garvin Woodland Gardens in Hot Springs. The bad news is early registration and the price break associated with the early sign up for the camps is over. However, registration for the 4-day camps is still available. The first 4-day camp will be held from June 16th through the 19th in Vol Walker Hall on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville. The second camp will be from June 23rd through the 26th at Garvin Woodland Gardens in Hot Springs. The camps will offer hands-on projects, tours, movies, and discussions led by architecture, landscape architecture, and interior design faculty members from the Faye Jones School. To register for more information, 575-4907.
This is Ozarks at Large. The pipeline that ruptured, spilling over 200,000 gallons of oil in Mayflower 1 year ago this week, currently sits dormant, spanning Arkansas from Texarkana to Pocahontas. Jacob Kaufman from our content partner KUAR explores the lingering question of what will become of ExxonMobil's Pegasus pipeline.
The 858-mile pipeline is divided into two sections from Illinois to Texas. The much smaller, slightly younger southern segment, contained entirely within Texas, could reopen as early as today. But for now, the northern segment, which includes Arkansas, is still under federal review. Whether or not the portion of the Pegasus pipeline running through Arkansas, built in 1947 and 48, will reopen is one of many unresolved issues still present after the town of Mayflower found out firsthand what it can mean when a pipeline fails. Soon after the pipeline ruptured, a wave of attention and energy was cast less than 30 miles away upon the source of drinking water for over 400,000 Arkansans, Lake Maumelle. John Tynan of Central Arkansas Water says the association has concluded shutting down or relocating the pipeline away from the topographically challenging watershed is their ultimate goal because of lingering questions for the oil giant.
Can they reliably and accurately identify crack threats in the Maumelle watershed? And to this point, we do not have enough data to lead us to believe that they can reliably and accurately identify cracks using the tools and technology that they're currently using.
ExxonMobil spokesman Aaron Strick would not directly address questions about the quality of pre-spill testing, but says Exxon plans to meet a deadline set by federal regulators at the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, or PHMSA.
They've set an April 7th deadline for us to basically submit the work plan that will verify the integrity of the entire pipeline, and that will take into account the findings of our investigation.
Rather than focusing on pre-spill tests, Strick focused on what further testing could tell about the integrity of the pipeline. One of the central questions gone relatively unanswered since the spill is if the pipeline is simply too old and its technology outdated. Proponents of the pipeline argue that with continued modification, a pipeline is not bound by fears of aging.
The ongoing maintenance of a pipeline, it really depends on a variety of factors. Age alone shouldn't dictate when it's necessary for a pipeline to be replaced.
Back in August, former PHMSA head Brigham McGowan, currently a lobbyist for an energy transportation organization, came to a similar conclusion while speaking at the Clinton School of Public Service. But Little Rock Mayor Mark Stodola, speaking to McGowan, didn't seem reassured.
You mentioned that pipelines, no matter when installed or when constructed, if properly inspected, could last indefinitely. Of course, a lot of us don't know exactly what that means.
Outgoing 2nd District Congressman Republican Tim Griffin has said the pipeline was moved before to accommodate engineering developments and changes to the Lake Maumelle watershed, and he prefers it be moved again. Griffin also sees a vast difference between modern pipeline technology, like what is proposed for the also contentious Keystone, and that currently being employed with Pegasus.
Saying that they're both pipelines and that's the end of it is like saying a 75 Pinto is the same as a 2013 Buick. I mean, yes, they are both pipelines, but they have very little else in common.
Both Griffin and Central Arkansas Water are seeking to mitigate risk in the event the pipeline does reopen in the future. They advocate for more and better quality sensor equipment, as well as more frequent placements of shutoff valves. Anthony Swift, a staff attorney for the environmental group Natural Resources Defense Council, argues even with better safety and maintenance, age is still a critical factor.
When pipelines are proposed today, they're usually proposed as 50-year projects. However, in reality, we're seeing that there is no abandonment plan for these pipelines. We're beginning to kind of push the envelope with our aging pipeline infrastructure.
Also, the very materials and technologies associated with Pegasus construction in the late 40s have been called into question. A report from PHMSA last year was critical of the welding technology called ERW, or electric resistance welded pipe. PHMSA says this pre-1970 weld type is known to be susceptible to the type of tear the Pegasus experienced, and PHMSA said ExxonMobil did not adequately take into account the risks and tests from as early as 2006, showing the pipeline to be susceptible to longitudinal tears because of the ERW weld. Perhaps the ultimate question at hand is, how much power do local authorities have to protect their water supply? Central Arkansas Water's John Tynan says it's been a year of exploring the relationship between international corporate entities, federal regulatory agencies, and state and local entities.
That balance of authority has been an interesting one for us to find out more about, but also has raised a number of questions about how can a state or how can a local community get involved. It's something that is a conversation that we have found is not just limited to Central Arkansas, but is one that numerous other communities across the nation are having.
Central Arkansas Water says that moving forward, more dialogue with Exxon is needed Tynan says the oil company has not seemed very receptive to the idea of relocating the pipeline, but Aaron Strick with Exxon characterizes the relationship as communicative and healthy. In Little Rock, I'm Jacob Kaufman.
It is Tuesday, April 1st, 2014. Happy April Fool's Day. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me, someone who's never foolish, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Oh, I should have thought about it being April Fool's Day. I don't have another language for today.
That's okay. That's all right.
I've barked. I've done British. I'm done now. We're just going to talk about music.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yura Margulis.
Yes.
Who has not been on stage locally for a while.
Because he's been all over halfway across the world.
Exactly. But he is back and will be performing at 6 o'clock Thursday in the Honor Student Lounge at Ozark Hall on the University of Arkansas campus.
Mm-hmm.
It starts at 5, actually, with a discussion of the music.
Yes.
And he says it's a great space because it'll be much like a European house concert. It's a nice, intimate setting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's free.
Well, you can't beat that.
I like free.
Yeah.
Also, on Thursday, soprano Laura Aiken, who has sung at La Scala and the Met and San Francisco Opera and the Chicago Lyric, will be performing at 8:15 at the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall.
So you can hit them both, really?
Yeah, you could.
And how much is this concert?
This one is $75.
Okay.
But how often do you get that opportunity?
Not very.
And also on Thursday night, actually, you could hit all of them.
Okay, we got a triple header here.
In a whole different vein, pop and folk singer Myla Smith is on tour in support of a new album called Hiding Places.
Mm-hmm.
And she will be at Smoke and Barrel in a show starting at 10:30.
You could hit all three.
You could. And she's being joined by guests Chris Mellum and Heather Batchelor. The name Heather Batchelor might not mean anything to you, but she is the sister of Ashley Batchelor, who works for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers and writes for me. And Ashley's very excited, so go see the show.
And what is that going to
say? $5.
So you could do this whole triple feature for $80.
That's not a bad evening.
No, it's not, because that's going to take you from 5 till
10:30 start time till 1 o'clock in the morning.
There you go.
There you go.
Right. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, the man who was there at the beginning of a social network that is now used by hundreds of millions of people around the world. We'll speak with the co-founder of Twitter, Biz Stone. Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen to today's Here and Now this afternoon from 1 to 3 on 91.3 FM.
Just ahead, an art gallery directed at visitors to the area in downtown Bentonville. First, a few other visual art opportunities in the region.
To kick off Sexual Assault Awareness Month, an exhibit sponsored by the Star Central Office at the University of Arkansas is on display through Friday in the Arkansas Union Connections Lounge. What Were You Wearing? Survivor Art Installation is a showcase of outfits inspired by clothing worn by University of Arkansas survivors of sexual violence. Star Central is the Office of Support, Training, Advocacy, and Resources on Sexual Assault and Relationship Violence, and extends appreciation to all the survivors who inspire such endeavors, and to Peace at Home Thrift Store for their support of the project.
In John Brown University's Art Gallery, beginning Thursday, will be Society of Illustrators Annual Competition Winners, featuring work from the Illustrators' 55th show, on display through May 5th. The Society of Illustrators Annual Travel Show features 46 pieces of the most outstanding works created throughout the year. Based off a juried competition and originally exhibited at the Museum of American Illustration at the Society of Illustrators in New York City, this selection goes on to tour around the country and is now in its 55th year.
Valentine's, The Art of Romance, a collection of cards from around the world and over the decades, remains on display through the end of the month at the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum. Also remaining at the RAM is Coin, installations by Dayton Castleman, a site-specific work illustrating dreams right out of Arkansas history. It remains on exhibit through May 25th. Dayton Castleman will deliver a lecture titled Tilting at Giants, Place, History, and the Artist's Imagination, Thursday, April 10th at 6 p.m. in Fort Smith. That lecture is free for RAM members, $5 for non-members.
Beginning tomorrow at the Art Center of the Ozarks is the 31st Annual Senior High Art Competition, showcasing the works of Northwest Arkansas students in a variety of genres and mediums. Winners in various categories will be honored. The Photographic Society of Northwest Arkansas will hold an artist's reception and gallery show for Arkansas photographer Christopher Johnson tonight. The event will take place from 6 to 8 at the Society's headquarters, which is located on 126th West Emma Avenue in Springdale. The event is open to the public.
The April show at Arcega's at the Depot in Fayetteville features the work of Fayetteville-based artist Sarah Leffler. The drawings were made during the academic year 2012-2013, when the artist lived with her husband and daughter in Japan. For the drawings in this exhibition, she used calligraphy ink and printed plastic film that's easy to find in art supply stores in Japan. A free opening reception is Thursday evening from 7 until 9.
This Thursday from 5 to 8:30 is the Fayetteville Underground's first Thursday, featuring the art of some of the University of Arkansas's MFA candidates. Music will be provided by Handmade Moments, which is being presented by Maybell Vintage Music Instrument Store. A special one-night installation entitled Fulcrum by Underground artist Ben Flowers will be presented in his studio. This will be followed Saturday with a workshop presented by Gabrielle Eidlett, Vision Check for artists and writers of any level. This workshop offers participants a day-long encounter with the constantly evolving quality we call vision in creative arts. Registration is $40, and you can register at Eidlett, that's I-D-L-E-T, at gmail.com.
And every month, the Visitor Center in downtown Bentonville devotes a large space to art, introducing local artists to people visiting from out of town. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas has more.
A walk around the Bentonville Square will take you past a bank, various restaurants, shops selling clothes and gifts, a coffee house, and of course, the Walton Five and Dime. Sightseers will also stroll past and perhaps into the Bentonville Convention and Visitors Bureau. Inside, they'll find a friendly volunteer sitting behind the front desk, greeting passersby, providing directions or advice on what to see and do. Along one wall are plastic holders, displaying a variety of brochures and flyers about attractions and events in Bentonville and the surrounding area. On the opposite wall, and perhaps unique to most visitors' centers, is art. An almost monthly rotation of works from local artists graces this brick wall. Kayleen Griffith is president of the Bentonville Visitors Bureau. She says that when they designed this building, this art wall was the total focus, knowing that they wanted to feature work by local artists.
With the opening of Crystal Bridges in 2011, trying to be visionary on that and making sure that we showcase that we know that the community's become going to be more art-driven and more culturally driven, and so we want to make sure we're part of that promotion of our local artists to our people that are coming into our community and visiting our community and have that interest in art.
As the walls are brick, the concept of how to display works of art securely had to be considered during the building process. Since opening in this location in 2009, feedback from visitors has been positive. Griffith says they appreciate the artwork and really enjoy the different kind of feel they get when they walk in.
When they come in, it's not just about getting a brochure and walking out. They might hang out and visit with our staff, talk about the artist. Even I think that we've sold some of the pieces. Now, we don't sell them. We have them contact the artist. And we have had some of those pieces purchased while they've been in here. So our focus is really just showcasing art in the community. And I think the people that are the visitors that are coming in have really enjoyed it. It just gives them a different feel when they come in.
In the last 5 years, Griffith estimates having the works of around 30 artists displayed here, with genres such as modern or abstract, mediums such as pencils, photography, charcoal, and quilts. The display right now is done in pastels. This work is that of Judy Howard. She's employed by day as a graphic designer at the University of Arkansas, but her hobby has long been painting landscapes. Landscapes, she says, can transport the viewer to new places or evoke memories of places already visited. They often have a calming, refreshing effect.
I like the textures. I love trees. And I like the textures you see in land and in roads and paths and fields and all of those elements that you see when you're out.
She calls these pictures and places little quiet places. She and her husband drive around a lot getting painting material. He drives and she looks out the window.
I'll see something, a little road or a little creek or trees with light hitting them a certain way. And we stop and I take pictures and we move on. So then I paint from those photographs at home.
These art outings are something that began while the two were dating in college. Judy was enrolled in a watercolors course and needed to gather material for her assignments. Yet, she had no car.
We would get together on weekends and we'd drive around and until we found something that I wanted to sketch. And we had lawn chairs in the back of our car and we'd take those lawn chairs out. I'd sit and sketch. He'd read a chemistry book and then when I had my sketch done, we'd pack up and go and look for another scene. We did that for a number of years until we started our family. And you can't stop with a baby and just sit and sketch for 30 minutes. So that's when I started using the camera. It's something we've just always done together, is just get out and look for some neat little scenes that I might want to paint. So we're still doing that after 42 years.
The couple travels during all four seasons and at different times of the day, resulting in a changing landscape. Some photos and pictures she remembers the location. Others she doesn't. This show, entitled Quiet Places 2, includes one picture from a trip to New Mexico, but most are from this region.
This one in the center at the bottom and the one down on the far end there, those are both from photos that I took at West Fork, where there's a creek that runs through there. And the paintings are very different, but really it's the same area. This one I know is kind of out on the, I believe it's on the west side of Fayetteville with the road and the wildflowers, where you can see several levels back. This one down on the right is near Alma, off of 540. The fall scene there with the kind of orange rust trees is down near, I believe down near Chester, Arkansas.
The medium for these 16 works is pastel. A lot of people, she says, don't know what pastels are, and they're surprised to see actual paintings. Pastels are pure powdered pigment, with just enough binder to hold the color together in stick form, so it's dry when it's put on a surface. Judy says it's smeary and messy, and she hated it when she first tried it about 35 years ago, just recently picking it up again 10 years ago, because she had seen some beautiful work from artists in the area. Now she's hooked. To me, her paintings look much less like the smeary drawings I did with pastels as a child, and more like the watercolor landscapes of Thomas Moran or Georgia O'Keeffe. She says the two are actually quite different.
To me, they're just the exact opposite as far as the medium itself, because watercolor is transparent, it's wet, and you work on white paper and let the light go through all the layers. And pastels are opaque and they're dry, and the colors are very vivid and rich. And I love them both.
She calls working with pastels painting, though pastels do come in that stick form. She holds it a little looser than a pencil, referring to it as a painting if the whole surface of the paper is covered with color, though it is done with a dry medium as opposed to paint. She is right-handed, and to prevent the side of her hand from smearing her work, she paints on an easel.
So that makes it a little easier. If I was working with it laying down flat, I'd probably, you know, wipe my hand through it several times. And I've learned to kind of hold my hand out a little bit and kind of watch for, you know, not smudging it. But occasionally you still accidentally hit the wrong spot with a finger. So you have to learn how to kind of patch those places. But that's why you put them under glass, too, because if they weren't under glass, then, you know, somebody could go over there and touch it and smear it and ruin it.
She works in a spare bedroom in her home and, without interruptions, says she can complete a painting in one day. Others she'll work on as she has the time, maybe taking a few evenings or over a week as her time allows. The paintings are not much larger than an average size piece of drawing paper, but it isn't typical paper she is using.
Pastel paper has to have some kind of a texture or a tooth to it. And they come in different colors, and they have a little bit of texture to them, and that texture helps hold the pigment to the paper. I use an underpainting with pastels, and so I'll start out with a kind of a light-colored, light tan-colored sanded paper and start my composition with a pastel color or maybe two or three, and you put a little bit on, and then you can dilute that with alcohol.
This, she says, makes it easier to cover the whole surface of the paper. She works as she did with watercolors, building a painting from the bottom up, beginning with the sky, then larger shapes with darker colors. Though in watercolor you work from light to dark, pastels you work from dark to light. Her works, she says, are kind of like her children, and she can't pick a favorite. Some, she says, are more successful than others, sticking in the viewer's mind a little more or longer. She frames them herself, and as she said, all are under glass. These have a cream mat with a gold frame. The color, gold, she says, blends in with the warm tones of her paintings. During her travels, Judy picks up pastels from any and every art store.
When you see them all laid out on a table, it's kind of like a kid in a candy store. You know, you just want to have one of every one, and it seems like you never have enough colors.
Sounds like a kid with a fresh box of Crayolas. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Gentry.
KUAF is supported by contributing listeners and by KUAF sustaining members. KUAF sustainers support the station by making monthly gifts in any amount. This steady and reliable support allows KUAF to continue to bring you the insightful and unique programming you enjoy. It's a sustainable, convenient, and significant way to support the station you love. Become a sustaining member of KUAF right now at KUAF.com.
We'll end the show with music from Dwayne Dopsey and the Zydeco Hellraisers. They'll be performing Saturday night at Neumeyer's Rib Room in Fort Smith on Garrison Avenue. It's part of Cajun Fest. That's a benefit for St. Boniface Catholic School. You can learn more about the show at ribroom.com. I like that the Zydeco Hellraisers are raising money for St. Boniface. We're going to hear the song Come On Down to New Orleans. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks so much for listening. You'll be back with Christina tomorrow at noon.
Come on down. Yeah, bring your bees. Bring all your people. Come down to New Orleans. We're going to have a good time. Everybody. We're going to eat crawfish pie, filet gumbo. Everywhere you go, ever down in New Orleans, man. Come on down. Everybody, come on down, y'all. Welcome down to New Orleans. We got people to greet you, people to dance with you, people to feed you down in New Orleans. We got crawfish pie, filet gumbo, praline, the crazy corner. Everywhere you go, we can have a good time all day, all night long. Everything is beautiful, gorgeous down in New Orleans, yeah. Welcome to the city. Look at here. Come on down. Come on down to New Orleans. Everybody. Bring a friend. Grab your partner and come downtown. Everybody. Come on down. Whoa, come on down. Come down to New Orleans. We got the music. Tell them, move your feet. Down in the French Quarter. Sights that you want to see. Come on down. Oh, come on down. Come down to New Orleans. Feel that gumbo and crawfish pie. That sounds good to me. Beignets and Café Du Monde. Anything that you ever need. Come on down, oh Lord, come on down, come down to New Orleans. Come on down, baby, walk with me.